Hello, friends. How's it going? Welcome to the podcast. Before we get started with our show today, let me remind you about a couple partners of the podcast. First up, Prepped Ready Meals. Prepped and Ready, they offer healthy meals delivered straight to your door. All you have to do is pop them in the microwave. They're good to go. They deliver in all of Metro Atlanta area. They just partnered with a fitness app called Fit Genie to make deliveries even easier. Go to PreppedReadyMeals.com. Use code BINGE10 at checkout for 10% off your order. That's BINGE10 for 10% off your order. Everybody loves healthy meals. Everybody loves meal planning. Well, now you can do it all in one. Go check these guys out. Support them again one more time at BINGE10 at checkout. PreppedReadyMeals.com. Our other friends are our friends over at Rebel Boudoir. Have you ever wanted that boudoir session and needed the little nudge to finally do it? Well, now you do. Our listeners will get an automatic discount of $100 off their session fee when they book a session with Jillian at Rebel Boudoir. These sessions make an awesome, unique gift for your wedding day, anniversary, birthday, or it's just an excuse to rock that bod you've got. Go check out Jillian's work for reference on her Instagram at Rebel Boudoir or her website, RebelBoudoirStudio.com. Mention us in your inquiry to get that discount. It's a great investment and an experience you definitely won't forget. And now, welcome to the show. What's crack-a-lackin'? Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to 153. That's just a number. It's episode 153 of the Binge Boys. Wow, we're just flying through them. Of course, that's me, Logan. You're used to my voice by now. You're probably sick of it. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of talking. But you're probably not sick of hearing Matt. What's up, Matt?
Man, that transition was just fitting for me. That sounds like something I would do. How's it going, Logan?
It's going fantastic. We also got, I was trying to think of a clever nickname off the top. I couldn't. We got Mitch. What's up, Mitch?
What's up, guys?
We're straight chilling. It's a wonderful Monday evening. Before we get into things, also shouts to roommate Jordan that just got home from doing something. I didn't hear you, but all right. because Turner's here. Where'd you go? This is all just live. yeah. How is everybody? We're great. We're great to be here. Glad to be here. Before we get into the episode, sorry, roommate Jordan distracted me, but it's not his fault. Let's remind everybody to go ahead and do three very important things. Just three things for me today while you're listening. Right now, go to iTunes.com/TheBingeBoysPodcast and leave that five-star rating. It takes 15 seconds. It's no hassle. Turn on that Christmas tree. Thank you. Gives us some character in here. It takes 15. Hey, we'll make it four things. If your Christmas tree's plugged in right now, or if it's not plugged in, plug it in. Get a little festive with us. And if you're driving and you don't have a tree with you, all right. It's no hassle. Takes 15 seconds to rate and review. It's not a big deal at all. As soon as you're done with that five-star rating, as I just said, please go leave that review. To put it nicely, if you listen to this podcast and I know you in real life and you haven't rated a review, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Until... Have you done it? You better have. And lastly, guys, just go make sure you're following along on Instagram at the Binge Boys Podcast. That's where you see our reviews, news, episode announcements, and everything in between. It's kind of the side-by-side companion to the show, if you will. Guys, before we get into our episode, why don't we give the people a little bit of a Thanksgiving recap? Mitch, how was, I'll start with you, buddy. How was the fam? What did you guys do? I saw your pictures. Brian's looking like a man. It's weird because I haven't seen a kid in like 10 years. What's up? How's the fam? What'd you guys do?
Yeah, the fam is doing good, doing good. Everybody's back from, my brother and sister are back from school, so it was good to see them and hang out with them for, they're here until like January. And
wait, is Brian in college?
Yeah.
What? How old is he?
He's 18.
Jesus, where's he going?
He goes to James Madison.
Oh shit! Cool. I had no idea he was that old. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Sorry to cut you off. Keep going.
So yeah, we did a social distancing type of Thanksgiving this year. We did go to my grandparents' house, but we like ate outside and wore masks the entire time. It was a little different and weird, but it was good to see everybody, and my whole family is doing well. And yeah, that's pretty much it. That's how my Thanksgiving went. How about, I don't know who to go to.
I'll go. Logan looks busy. My Thanksgiving was good, man. Yeah, it was good to see my fam. Same sort of social distancing, except up around Chicago wasn't quite as nice. So we were inside just with the windows open. My cousin's girlfriend's family has a restaurant, so we wanted to, I think they acquired with the great timing of about February of 2020, so wanting to help them with their venture there, so we got it catered from there. Had two different kinds of stuffing, my number one Thanksgiving side, so I was definitely pumped about that. But yeah, just some good hangout time, just with the family. Don't seem to come by as often as I'd like anymore. So take any chance I can get. What about you, Logan? How's your Thanksgiving?
It was cool. Similar situations to both of you. Kind of just low key. My family, my brother and sister are also back in town for school. Yeah, we hung out, we ate, got together. My aunt and uncle, one of my mom's sisters, lives right down the street, quite literally like 30 seconds away from my parents. So they came over, my aunt and uncle and two cousins, and we kind of just kept it low key, didn't do anything super fancy with a big family get together, kind of just kept it chill, had a nice breakfast Thanksgiving morning. That's kind of turned into a tradition. Past few years before COVID, what we did was keep it, what Thanksgiving morning, we would wake up and go play tennis, at the neighborhood tennis court. And before we played tennis, we would all take a shot of Fireball whiskey. Don't ask me how that started. That's probably just a lame my dad tradition that was created. Yeah, not this year. We just had a nice little meal, and that's about it. But good to hear that everyone had a nice and safe and healthy holiday weekend. You guys Black Friday or Cyber Monday shopping? Or are you guys keeping it low key this year? Like me, I'm doing the exact same thing. I won't say that I didn't get online and try to get myself something that I had previously been scammed for. but no luck there. So I think I'm saving a little bit of dime this year. What about you guys?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get my Christmas shopping done, and nothing that I was really looking for someone else was going to give me a very good deal. So unfortunately, no W's nor L's taken this Black Friday, Cyber Monday. What about you, Mitch?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I looked, but I never was able to get anything for Christmas shopping. And I did look, however, for a couple of things for myself that I thought that I wouldn't be able to get, like, for Christmas. So, but turns out that I think either wasn't on sale or just couldn't pull the trigger on buying anything. So
cool. Yeah, it sounds like we're all kind of in the same boat there, but that's okay. We got to save our money for the good stuff that 2021 will bring us, like hopefully going to the movies again. But until then, I guess we got to dive right in to our first little news thing. I saw this very briefly on Twitter. I haven't really seen it anywhere else. Hasn't been widely reported, but the boss of Xbox, Phil Spencer, said that an Xbox app could be coming to smart TVs as early as next year. I'm assuming he means 2022 by this statement. In this article from Polygon, it says playing Xbox games on your TV may not require an Xbox at all soon. Xbox head Phil Spencer tells The Verge that we might see a dedicated Xbox app for smart TVs by next year, one that could stream console games directly using Microsoft's Project X Cloud service. In a quote, he says, quote, "I think you're going to see an Xbox app for smart TVs in the next 12 months. I don't think anything is going to stop us from doing that. What we used to call a TV was a CRT that's just throwing an image on the back of a piece of glass that I'm looking at. Now, TVs are really more of a game console stuffed behind a TV screen that has more of an app platform, Bluetooth capabilities, streaming capabilities. Is it really a TV anymore, or is it just a form, a different form of a device? The amount of computing capability in just simple home devices has increased over the past few years, and I think gaming is going to become a part of that as well." He says something. He hinted at another hardware option similar to Amazon's Fire TV Stick. He said, quote, "You could imagine us even having something that we include in the Game Pass subscription that gave you an ability to stream games on your television and just buying a controller." And that's it for now. This is kind of a big deal, I think. Also kind of weird timing on it, considering the fact that they're trying to now launch and sell two brand new next generation consoles.
But if you wait, it'll soon be obsolete is what he's saying.
Yeah. But if you just wait 12 short months, you could get all of that capability in a little thumb drive that costs $60. Mitch, what do you make of this?
This is interesting. It's very enticing for people that don't normally buy consoles, I would say, that maybe want to have some kind of gaming capability on their TV, maybe for like parties or something. But I don't know. Like, for me, I don't think I plan on getting the new Xbox. So if they go with this cheaper, like somewhat streaming option, I think that might be something that I'd like try and check out maybe, but I don't know. I don't even understand how it's going to work. Is it just all going to be cloud like streaming, or like, cause that's going to be weird. And if I have an Xbox account that's not active, but if I activate it and use this streaming device or whatever, then will I be able to play like the new Xbox games on my smart TV or something? So that's going to be interesting. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, that question was sort of what I was coming to. Will it be like the full product offering of like Xbox? Or will you be able to play like the newest Halo, like just, you know, like with the $60 thumb drive and just like stream it? I feel like they've tried this several times. It isn't this kind of what like Stadia is. I'm not super familiar with that, but I just feel like if you aren't getting like a full console, you also don't have the internet to support playing like the newest game just in any kind of like decent quality. But maybe if they're kind of like I don't know, just like less, not like lower games, but just like a little bit simpler, just like old school. Maybe just like, is this like a library like of classic games that they never don't require as many resources? That's the only way it could work. I'm pretty skeptical, mainly because our, like the smart TV I use, just all the built-in apps are like crap. We just have to go to the Fire Stick anyway. So it's like, I don't need another stick thing just to do this. What about you, Logan? If you continue to take L's on the PS5, will you just go the all streaming Xbox app route?
I'm wondering the same things you guys are asking, like, how are they going to market us this? The Xbox Series X, it's the most fast Xbox ever. It's the most beautiful Xbox ever. But if you wait 12 months, you can get it in a little thumb drive. What's the point? Like,
yeah.
Like, I just find it very odd. Like, it'd be different if they waited till like E3 of 2021 to like say like, hey, we might be working on something that might be an alternative. But it just seems odd. Like, why tell people that this is? Is he saying that the concept will be born in 12 months, or is he saying that this product will be on? Is this going to be the next product that's impossible to get your hands on? hey, Phil Spencer, why don't you guys focus on being able to deliver one console before you promise another one? Okay. This next headline really, and when I say really, I mean really fucking got my attention. And we've been talking about Spider-Man here on this podcast for quite some time. I thought we were done reporting about Spider-Man until we got some official news or something. But I couldn't not comment on this. In an article from CBR, which I can only assume stands for Comic Book Reporting?
Review, I believe.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. It says Spider-Man 3, the currently untitled sequel to Spider-Man Far From Home, is expected to include a significant interdimensional multiverse storyline, kind of like what we've been reviewing or speculating the past couple of months. Also with rumors that Jamie Foxx is going to be on set as Electro, rumors of Doctor Strange being involved with the movie. Also rumors including Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield showing up. However, we got a little snip that a new rumor supports this idea and follows reports that Alfred Molina from Spider-Man 2, the guy who played Dr. Octopus, the greatest villain ever, was spotted on the set. According to several sources, Alfred is believed to be reprising his role as Doc Ock in this movie, first portrayed in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2. However, it is unconfirmed whether Alfred will be playing the same Doc Ock or he will be delivering a new unseen version of Doc Ock, similar to the Electro reports saying that Electro, the new Electro that we might be seeing is going to be a different character altogether. Yeah, we'll get some new information soon. The film arrives in theaters around a year from now, December 17th, 2021. Matt, Mitch, does this make you more, less excited? Are you about where you're at, where we were talking about the casting of Jamie Foxx being on set? What's your thoughts, Matt? Or does this make you any more hype?
It doesn't make me... I mean, I'm just quite hype in general. This doesn't really move the needle, but it just seems like too much smoke for there not to be a fire with some sort of Spider-Verse, like with one, you know, kind of redo villain, you know, potentially being played by like the same actor. You think like, okay, they're just, you know, they like the guy, so they're giving it another shot. But now that there's two, it's like, all right, there's something probably going on here. Yeah, something going on. Maybe they'll play like, yeah. So we'll see, man. What about you, Mitch?
Yeah, I definitely think this is kind of not confirms a multiverse thing. Like, that, I think they've already been really pushing the idea that it's like multiverse and that they're all in the same universe to some extent. And I definitely think seeing Dr. Octopus again on screen will be awesome, especially if it's Alfred Molina. So yeah, I'm excited. This makes me more excited than the Jamie Foxx news, just because I wasn't as big of a fan of his Electro portrayal, but this is now getting me super excited to see a trailer at some point. So,
man, I'm so hyped for this shit. Come on, man. You're playing with me when you say Jamie Foxx. Like, okay, that's cool. Just like Mitch said, like, I was fine with his portrayal. I didn't love it. I didn't hate him. But come on, man. You can't be teasing me here. Like, Alfred, Spider-Man 2 up until The Dark Knight, in my opinion, was one of the better superhero movies. And still, to this day, one of the better superhero movies we've gotten ever. In my opinion, I love Doc Ock as a villain in general. I think it's incredibly badass. And I liked the female version that they did in the Into the Spider-Verse animated movie, too. I thought she was badass.
Definitely.
So I don't know. I mean, spoiler alert if you haven't seen Spider-Man 2, but he died at the end of Spider-Man 2. He kind of like gave his life to, you know, save New York from the black hole that he basically created. You know, the end of the movie kind of shows his body drifting off through the ocean and the arms kind of like dying. So I assume it's got to be a new portrayal. Can you imagine, dude, just picture this, like if it's the same Doc Ock, then what if like as Tom Holland is like jumping through dimensions and shit, like he jumps through a scene that is in Spider-Man 2 already, like the bank robbery scene, for example. Yeah. And like Tom Holland, just like a portal opens up and Tom Holland just bums in there and Tobey Maguire is like, what are you doing? Or something. And like, oh my God. Is there any other villain from any previous Spider-Man movie that you'd be game to see pop up in this? Like, are you here for what's his name? Willem Dafoe Green Goblin or James Franco Green Goblin?
I was thinking Sandman from the Raimi films. I feel like he wasn't sort of given the room to breathe that he needed to. That movie was just a little overstuffed, and I like Sandman like as an idea.
Yeah, I totally agree with Matt there. I was going to say Sandman too. Yeah, it's this is gonna be pretty cool. What they decide to do, like I mean, now I guess they have unlimited options of what they can do with this movie. So,
come on, man, please don't shit the bed on this, Kevin Feige. I know you've got it going on, man. Like, come on, I can't talk about it anymore. Like, I'm pretty sure I heard not too long ago that they were supposed to do some kind of teaser trailer this month in December. That's what I heard. Or I guess, well, when you're hearing this, it's December. But yeah, I guess we'll just see going forward. Clifford, the big red dog.
Yikes.
Live action trailer here. We got a little live action teaser trailer for Clifford the Big Red Dog. This is the first article that came up for me, so bear with me. In an article from Fox News, Paramount Pictures dropped a teaser for live action adaptation of Clifford the Big Red Dog based on the children's books. This holiday season, we're thankful for the pets that whose love got us through the year. But next year, get ready to love bigger. And it's just a shot of a giant golden retriever covered in red. Did this turn you off like it did the rest of the internet, essentially?
Yep.
Yes.
That's all the oxygen I want to give this. It's so gross.
Yeah, this ain't it.
Paramount.
let's get a Sonic the Hedgehog situation where you guys use half your budget to redesign Clifford and give us a better movie, because as of right now, this they could have done something better, right? Like,
it's not even a Sonic COVID thing.
The Sonic thing, I get. They were going for something different, but this ain't it.
No.
It's
a giant red dog. You don't need to make it look so realistic. I think people are able to suspend their disbelief if it's 30 feet tall.
Yeah. So,
they didn't even use a full-sized dog either. Like, it's like a puppy.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know, man. It was weird. Like, the one thing that I saw about it, like, it was weird.
Yeah, they totally, like, it looked like something that they had just done in paint. They just, like, took the paint can to get it all red and then clicked on the corner, dragged it diagonal to scale it up. Like, look at me saying, like, that's all the oxygen I want to give it. And here we are just sort of going off on it.
I was going to say, give me... It, unfortunately, Logan had to step away real quick, but and he's gonna miss this banger of a movie idea. But give me my motherfucking boy Caillou, the base god Caillou,
live action Caillou.
I thought that would be funny, but
no, that crushed, dude. Oh. Well, yeah, we'll have to get we'll have to do some Caillou talk later when Logan steps back. How about these Grammy noms? Did you have a chance to take a look at them, Mitch, or not really?
Yeah, I did look at the Grammy nominations, and the controversy around some of these are, or the fact that a few artists were not nominated was, I know, controversial. Recently, so like The Weeknd was the main one that came to mind. I remember he tweeted about it, and I saw some Instagram posts, and fans were getting riled up over that. And I'm looking at the list or the website.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor Noah is going to be the host. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw that. I
posted before.
I don't think so. I think he's a very good presenter. Like, I think his, you know, depending on what you think about his politics, you know, doesn't matter one way or another. He is just very funny and a very good presenter.
Yeah, it says right here, 2021 Grammys will mark the first time the Grammy nominated comedian will host. So yeah, it's his first time hosting, and he's also Grammy nominated. That's pretty cool.
It says here the big winners of it are Taylor Swift, Dua Lipa, and Roddy Ricch have 6 nominations, but the leader in the clubhouse is Beyonce with 9. Which,
damn.
Which I think is for Black is King. That was her project that came out this year. I can't remember. That's what it's looking like here.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see who wins some of these. I know one of the artists that I follow, Tame Impala, is nominated for some awards, which I thought was pretty cool, because I never even would have thought they would have considered him, but
yeah, for sure. There's definitely some categories that I feel like are, I know all of them, and then I feel like even genres I feel like I know pretty well, like best rap album, like I haven't heard of like some of the ones. I obviously heard of Nas and Royce da 5'9", but have you heard of D Smoke?
No.
Yeah, I haven't either. Or
that's in the rap and hip hop.
Yeah, best rap album.
D Smoke's also up for best new artist, so maybe he's new on the scene.
Must be.
Megan Thee Stallion, she's up for Best New Artist. Doja Cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's some people that we've reviewed in the past that that are up for some nominations, which is really cool.
Definitely, yeah.
Let me see here.
I think this might be a bit of a spoiler for some of my year-end list, but for Album of the Year, I think my personal number one by the Black Pumas is nominated.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, I just actually started listening to some of their music when I looked at the list like last week or when it came out, and they're really real. I love the sound of them.
Yeah,
I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like jazzy and also kind of like rock. Like I want to say like not rock, but like.
Sort of old bluesy, real.
Yeah,
blues
yeah,
inspired.
Yeah. Blues. That's what I'm looking for there.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, real dude. Quick.
hope you don't mind. I'm getting some. I don't know if it's just me. I'm getting some weird feedback. You hear that, Matt?
Yeah, I was getting it as well.
Mitch, try muting yourself real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, here, go ahead and leave and then come back in.
Yeah, because it only just started.
Yeah, just now. So you started talking about Grammys?
We did, yeah, just sort of running through a few of the categories and just some of our favorites that got nommed and the weekend kind of getting snubbed and feeling bad about it.
Yeah, I saw he's been going off kind of on Twitter and on Instagram about how the Grammys are rigged, and then kind of also somewhat kind of how the Grammys are a little racist and kind of snubbing him, as well as a few other artists. I saw Halsey had some opinions about being not nominated or something. Really just the weekend though, unless I'm forgetting something. Someone else that really got snubbed. Personally, maybe it just shows how mainstream I am, and I hate that sometimes. But who are all these people?
That's what I was saying on some of the genres. I feel like I'm more familiar with. Like there were some on the best rap album that I didn't even recognize.
Yeah, like. So if you're talking about record of the year, like I've heard, is it bad? I don't know who the Black Pumas are.
We were just, that's who we were talking about when you just came back in. They're real good. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'd give them a listen. I think they're going to be at or near the top of my album of the year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll give them a shot. Album of the year. Sorry. I don't want to go over anything you guys have already done. They're nominated again. Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Coldplay had an album this year. Okay. I'll go back and listen to it.
Yeah, I just some of these were interesting because I think they came out in 2019, some of the albums, but the Grammys are weird where they have a portion from like I think it's like a cutoff date of like September of the previous year. If you don't get nominated for the following year, then you're eligible for the next year or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think they go by the normal calendar year when they do their nominees. I think you get a couple extra months of leeway. Song of the year, some of these songs I recognize, but yeah, like especially like with Best New Artists, like okay, I know who Noah Cyrus is, I know who Doja Cat is, no Meg Thee Stallion obviously, but who? Who are these people? Do you know who these people are, Mitch? Like Ingrid Addresses or Andress?
Yeah.
Phoebe
Bridgers is. She's good.
Yeah, I've heard of Phoebe Bridgers.
D Smoke? assuming that's a rapper. K Trundada. Like, I don't know some of these artists, which maybe shows that I'm too mainstream, but Grammys usually kind of does this every so often. They nominate a bunch of artists that nobody's ever heard of. But I mean, I'll still be tuning in. I'm curious how they do it this year again, like with, you know, virtual award shows being a thing. So, yeah, I mean, do you guys have more thoughts about the Grammys?
No, I think the only other thing we hit while you were gone where we gave Trevor Noah hosting a big thumbs up.
Oh, he's hosting. I didn't hear that.
Yes.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Yeah, I like him. He's good.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. We'll see. Airing Sunday, January 31st. Sounds like a plan. Trevor Noah, interesting choice from previous years. So very interested to see how he does. Okay. Good deal. Mitch?
Yeah.
Did you watch The Mandalorian?
I did.
Oh my god. Okay, Matt, if you really don't want spoilers, this is the episode. Going.
Okay. I think I know the spoiler, so.
Okay. So there might be they jump
right into it this episode.
Oh, they really do. You get that opening shot, which let me say this. The way that this episode was filmed, more specifically, name drop Ahsoka was filmed with her action set piece in the beginning. Like, Dave Filoni, like, bro, just excellent. Like,
I know, dude. Dave Filoni is literally the future. The future is in the balance, like, in his hands.
Yeah.
And, like, he is going to just blow everything out of the water if he's attached to any of the projects. I feel like without Dave Filoni, Star Wars will not succeed. But with him, I mean, they could do so much. And I feel like with this episode, they kind of lay down the tracks of like what they want to do and where they want to go with this, not only this show, but like future shows that may pop up. So yeah, big shout outs to Dave Filoni for this episode, man. I love this episode.
Yeah, this was an absolute powerhouse of an episode. This episode was titled The Jedi, which we had speculated on for a while. So let's hit a couple of the key major notes that this episode had. Number one, let's get on top of it. Baby Yoda's real name. They reveal the name of the child, a.k.a. Grogu is Baby Yoda's real name. Kind of like when I heard it, I wasn't like, that's not very cute. But then I thought, I don't hate it. Like, I don't. But I hope that they realize that it's not like it's a flip of a switch. Like, I'm going to continue calling Grogu Baby Yoda. And I think most of society will keep that up. And I think
for sure.
Mando is also going to continue calling him the kid or the baby or whatever he calls. I think he calls him kid or the kid or whatever. So yeah, you get Baby Yoda's real name. His name is Grogu. Ahsoka kind of gives us a big backstory to him. She reveals that Baby Yoda was raised in the Jedi Temple on Coruscant and received training from many masters. Once the Order 66 was executed in Revenge of the Sith, he was hidden away by a unnamed Jedi. Interested if that's anything, you know, to be developed, or if that they're just like, oh yeah, some Jedi grabbed him and put him underneath the bed and he hid while everyone else was getting got. She says to Grogu, I sense much fear in you. mirroring Yoda's line to Anakin from The Phantom Menace. So yeah, that's kind of the baby Yoda. We get a lot of baby Yoda backstory. I thought it was a lot to give us baby Yoda backstory and Ahsoka in one episode, but I guess the way they did it with Ahsoka being the one that gave us the details, it makes sense. Yeah, Mitch, what are your thoughts on baby Yoda's real name here?
Yeah, I like the name choice. I feel like many people will still call him baby Yoda. Just because that's what we've known him as. And, so that's kind of, that'll be interesting to see where that goes. But, my thoughts for Ahsoka Tano. I always go back to the Clone Wars intro narrator voice. Dude that just says Ahsoka Tano. yeah, I thought Rosario Dawson was awesome as Ahsoka, and her portrayal as Ahsoka was really well done. And just some of the character, like the movements and like mannerisms, I guess are a better term for it, were very like reminiscent of like Ahsoka in the Clone Wars series. So I was definitely satisfied and happy and just super stoked and excited to see her on screen, like live action. I think that's awesome. And she does help Baby Yoda or Grogu, however you pronounce his name, telling his backstory, which I thought was like perfect for where the show is headed. And I don't know if you want to drop the next kind of spoiler, but what we got at the end of the episode with Ahsoka in the battle, which I thought the action in this episode was amazing. Ahsoka in that fight scene with the old Imperial commander, whatever her title was. Do we want to talk about that spoiler for potential future Star Wars lore and shows, or do we want to just leave it at where we're at and see if we get any feedback from listeners here?
I, to be honest with you, must have not caught it until reading this article telling me what that last part is. I'll have to go back and rewatch the end of that episode, but this episode reveals to you that Ahsoka is currently hunting Grand Admiral Thrawn, bro. Like the guy that they've been talking about having in the Star Wars universe for how long?
For years.
The villain that they were hunting in the final season of Rebels. This suggests that he's, I guess still alive. It's the same time period-ish. But he's alive and well, and the chick that Morgan Elsbeth, that was her name, is apparently his protege. This show, what are the chances, Mitch, that Thrawn is a Thanos situation for The Mandalorian, where they tease him and tease him and tease him, but we won't see him until like a season from now or two seasons from now? Like, what if the ending shot of season two of The Mandalorian is Thrawn like turning around and smiling, just like Thanos did at the end of the Avengers? Like, what are the chances of that?
I think that those chances are pretty high right there. Like, I think that would be the way that they should go about doing it. I don't think they should give us Thrawn like right away. I feel like they could set up, because I feel like they might be in talks with doing an Ahsoka show. Because I don't know if we're going to see any more of Ahsoka Tano in the rest of The Mandalorian this season. So I feel like if we got a spinoff Ahsoka show, like it could be a situation where we get like a couple of these Star Wars shows running and we get like a crossover villain situation where he's playing like, cause he's like after the Empire falls, after Return of the Jedi, that basically I think Thrawn is the one that takes the reins over everything, which is what Rebels was kind of about. Thrawn is like the main guy still running what's left of the Empire. So it's a man. I just thought that the tease itself of just mentioning his name, that he's like, we could see him, is just like, oh man, this show is just so good. Like this was written so perfectly. And the fact that Ahsoka's looking for him just makes it even cooler. So I'm like, I don't even know what to really like think. I feel like I'm rambling at this point, but, yeah, man, it's the way that they're like these shows are headed, and The Mandalorian specifically, it's going to just get better and better. I think we have 3 episodes left of this season. And I saw a tweet from one of the animation directors. It was posted on like it got shared a bunch of times or something. And I saw it on Twitter or Instagram, one of the two. And the animation director said, these last 3 episodes are a roller coaster ride. So be prepared. And like I'm just super excited because I love this show. I love the way that they're making this kind of somewhat of a reboot of real Star Wars. Like it's a very nostalgic show for fans of the original trilogy, I think.
Yeah, I can agree. You said everything very well there. I won't comment anymore, but yeah, we don't rate individual episodes, but if we had to rate this episode, this is probably a 10 out of 5. Like this was just a superb episode in every way, shape or form. So yeah, here's to hoping that animation director's promise is true, that these last 3 episodes are a roller coaster. God damn. I feel the same way you do. Like this show is just incredible. As long as Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau both have some kind of involvement of Lucasfilm going forward, like I have high hopes. Why the hell don't they just give Dave Filoni a Star Wars trilogy? Like what are they doing? Come on. Like, I think that,
yeah,
that
they should.
Like, why isn't this dude directing his own films? Whatever. I don't know. He seems to be kicking ass in TV, so I won't disturb the peace. Next up, let's talk about Hillbilly Elegy.
Yeah.
Mitch, I don't think you got a chance to catch this one, so me and Matt will take the reins here.
Aha.
Was there a joke there?
No, just like since I sit out Mandalorian.
All right. So background about the movie real quick. It's on Netflix. It's rated R. Hour and 56 minutes. It's a drama. It came out this last week, November 24th, 2020, for Thanksgiving weekend. A great family film here. Directed by Ron Howard. Written by J.D. Vance. We'll get to that in a second. And it stars Amy Adams, Glenn Close, Gabriel Basso, a bunch of other no-names. But you're really tuning in here to watch Amy Adams and Glenn Close here.
Yep.
The synopsis reads, as an urgent phone call puts a Yale law student back to his Ohio hometown, which I think is incorrect, isn't it? Kentucky hometown?
So the Kentucky is like where it started, where they go on vacation. Oh, but like yeah. his family's like originally from Kentucky, and then they moved to rural Ohio.
Gotcha.
A little ways in.
And then it says where he reflects on three generations of family history and his own future. So right off the bat, Matt, you gave this a 3 out of 5. I think I ultimately gave it a 3 out of 5 as well.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this film?
So I did a little like digging just into like the story of it, just to, you know, understand it a little bit better. And apparently this was the book that this is based off of was released in 2016, and it was kind of seen as this guy's memoir was a lot of insight into just the rural urban divide that sort of became apparent in America in 2016. So I was going in sort of expecting it to be a bit more universal than it was, instead of just kind of the retelling of this guy's story and sort of like the urgent phone call disturbance storyline was actually my least favorite. My favorite parts was the flashbacks that sort of showed how things got to the point that they did. But yeah, I think Amy Adams' performance was okay. I think Glenn Close crushed it. I thought hers was really good. But overall, I went 3 out of 5 just since I think there was a lot of good stuff to say, but I think it was ultimately just very personal to this guy in a little bit. There was never that extra step made in making it universal to any viewer. So that's why I sort of kept it at a 3. What about you?
Sure. I agree with all of your points. I think Glenn Close absolutely murders her performance here. Amy Adams, while she did well, I think she overdid it a little bit. And that may have just been the writing, and that may be what J.D. Vance intended, because kind of a backstory of the story, folks. The story here is that this kid, his name is JD. He is the son of Amy Adams' character, or I guess real person. These aren't characters, they're based on real people. Bev is her name in the movie. And he is her son. And Bev is just an absolute train wreck of a person. And her mom, played by Glenn Close, her name is Mama in the movie. I love how they don't have like real names.
She's Mama.
She's just Mama. Like she doesn't have a name. Like they call her Mama, which is just dope. So, my thoughts are kind of all over the place. My main point here is that they really did a good job making you hate, and I mean hate, Amy Adams' character.
Yeah.
Like, and it really just goes to reflect on the J.D. Vance's experiences as a child, because Godspeed to him and his sister. I'm glad they're doing well for themselves now. Yep. But holy fuck, dude. Like,
that's a roller coaster.
This is not a fun movie to watch. I'll tell you that. It's a very serious film. There's no better way to say it than this movie isn't fun. Like, you're not going to come out of it thinking, wow, that was, well, I don't regret watching the movie. In fact, I'm kind of glad I did watch it, but, yeah, man, just real upsetting kind of a movie. Not fun to watch. I think Matt said it before we started recording, and my girlfriend said it when we watched it together. She said, well, this is just a fucking bummer. Like 20 minutes in, like, this movie's just a bummer, isn't it? And it's like, yeah, they really do that well. And like I said, with Amy Adams kind of trying too hard, it almost gives off the impression that they're trying too hard to show you that this boy's life was really fucked up. But, you know, that's maybe insensitive of me to say, because if these experiences are true, then God, anyone would need therapy after this situation. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. That I think it did a really good job of sort of framing just like the struggle of just getting the basic stuff with the mom, with having Amy, this person like as your mom. And I feel like it doesn't like do a great job of like explaining why she's the way she is. But I guess like as a kid, like that's, you know,
they have like they have like a 15-second, 20-second, like, where Mama says to JD, like, well, you know, she had it hard growing up. And then it shows, like, one flashback of Papa or Papa being really abusive towards Mama and the girls.
Yep.
But that's it. Like, you don't get any explanation on why this woman is super cracked out, heroin addict, like...
Narcissist,
bipolar. Like, she's got every negative trait you can pretty much think of. Like,
yeah,
it's really tough to watch, honestly. And it's, I'm not recommending that you run out and see this. However, it was a well done movie, especially Glenn Close's acting, and Amy Adams really does well too. It just comes off like, okay, we get it. She's an asshole. Like,
you just can't root for her.
No, you can't. There's no,
yeah,
there's quite literally no redeeming qualities of this woman.
Yeah. One other point I wanted to sort of bring up with you. What did you think of kind of like the overall structure of it being framed around like the story of him trying to, you know, fight his way back to to a job interview? I just thought that was like, I feel like there's probably a better story you can use to kind of like frame all this. That part just felt kind of lame.
Yeah. I would have preferred if it was just a full blown movie about his childhood and maybe flashbacks here and there to the future. Mm-hmm. Because you do see qualities of his mother in him as an adult, kind of like freaking out or getting really heated really easily or getting violent really easily. But yeah, the structure of like, I go to Yale and my job interview's tomorrow. Oh shit, my mom's in the hospital. Better drive 10 hours to go see if she's okay. And then while you're with your recovering mother that almost OD'd, you're like, now, promise me you'll sit still because I got to drive back and go to a job interview.
Yeah.
It's like they could have done something different, but
with that family, there is definitely a better story to frame this around than that one, but maybe that's the structure of the memoir as well. So
maybe,
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm maybe even interested in reading the memoir now, cause I'm sure the memoir has more gruesome and more personal details.
That's exactly the reason why I feel like I do not need to read the memoir. If this is what made it into the movie, I don't want to know what they had to leave out.
Yeah, true. So yeah, if you haven't seen this movie, I'd give it a shot. I mean, you know, with the theaters being closed down and we don't really get anything cool until Soul and Wonder Woman. So yeah, it's on Netflix. It's free. If you're subscribed, go check it out. Mitch, I'd still watch it if I were you. I think you'd enjoy the performances and the story here. But if you're looking for something to sit down with the family, this ain't it. I'll say that. This ain't it.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, this sounds like something that my family would probably watch all together anyway. Like, we watch I Know This Much Is True, and that was kind of like touches on a lot of some of the stuff that you talk about. That you talked about. So, yeah, we like the very, hard to watch, you know, true to like, it's a very human, from what I get from what you guys were talking about, like talking about it is it sounds like a very human, type of movie where you have to like, actually feel for the characters basically also because they're real people in real life too. So
yeah,
the struggle is real out there. So
It is. So with that being said, everybody, Hillbilly Elegy.
Elegy.
Elegy is available on Netflix. Go check it out. We'll move right along to another piece of media that was that released over the weekend. Miley Cyrus dropped an album called Plastic Hearts. And now we're going to tell you our thoughts about it. I'll go ahead and start off and I'll let you guys talk. I feel like I talk so fucking much, dude. I personally did not like this, and I'll tell you why. I'll get out of the way. Miley Cyrus, yes, very talented individual. It runs in the family with Billy Ray being the dad. And is Noah Cyrus related to them?
There is at least a half brother who is in the classic pop punk band Metro Station. Yeah.
gotcha. Well, this album, it's categorized as a pop album. And I would almost categorize it pop alternative, maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of, lack of a better term here, grungy poppy songs in here.
I was thinking power pop was my
power pop.
Yeah.
Can we start another podcast called Power Pop?
Power Pop Pod, the triple P.
Yo, welcome to the PPP.
You down with PPP? Yeah, you know me.
I'm not going to say that I hated this album because, like every album, I'll at least give props to the production and the writing behind the music. It's just not my type of music, but like Mitch has said previously when he reviews hip hop stuff, I don't want to completely trash it because I know a lot of people are really happy with this album and stuff. It's just not for me. I'm never going to listen to any of these songs ever again. I gave it a 2 out of 5 for that reason. It wasn't trash. I didn't hate listening to it, but I'm never going to listen to it again. It's just not my style. Mitch, what you got to say about it?
I could talk about this album for a bit. Definitely, I enjoyed it. I think I gave it a 4 out of 5. I really like the genre bending, like kind of influences that are mixed in there, because it's kind of like a pop album. It's kind of like an alternative album. Reminds me of like 80s music. And it also had some, there are little bits of like hip hop influence in there as well, but not a whole lot. I really liked, and I enjoyed listening to this all the way through. And I love the features on this, which make me think of it being like very 80s style of an album. At least sonically, it sounds like that. There are features from Billy Idol, Joan Jett, and the Blackhearts. And there's even a remix with Stevie Nicks, which I like when I was trying to think of who Miley Cyrus sounds like, because her vocals are kind of what shine throughout the whole album. She kind of has that like gravelly, like straining, like singing in some sort of a sense. I don't know how to put it into words, but she kind of reminds me of a lot of Stevie Nicks in that sound that she makes when she sing, like her singing, I guess. I really like the acoustic songs too. I think the acoustic songs are Angels Like You and High. They were really good. It kind of like differentiates from the overall pop and 80s style that's going on throughout the album. And, I added a couple of these tracks, to my like tracks on Spotify. I probably won't listen to them all the time, but I just was like, you know what? These are pretty good songs. So I added them. And then I can't forget about the pop. This was probably the pop song of off the whole album, the Prisoner song with Dua Lipa. Yep. That was probably the only one that really stood out to me as like the overall pop influence type of song. Very repetitive lyrics and beat overall, but I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this album. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think I sort of come down in the middle of you two. I mean, numerically, because I gave it a 3 and you gave it a 2 and a 4. But then from what Mitch was saying, I feel like I differ in that I wasn't as drawn to some of the acoustic stuff, but sort of the more higher energy stuff. I was listening with my girlfriend. She put it well, and she was like, would I consider Miley Cyrus a good straight singer? Not really. Would I consider her a good performer? Yes. Whereas like in a lot of the acoustic stuff, it sort of comes down to her just like pure voice, having to sort of bring it through. Whereas in sort of the more punky stuff, she's able to kind of sort of her like lower register, less classically proficient singing voice can really shine through. And she's able to do that well. And I think just since the song breakdown, there were less of those and more of the acoustic ones that Mitch said he liked is why the score was a little bit lower. But I think my favorite one was just the title track. It was the second track, just Plastic Hearts. So that's definitely going to be staying on a few different playlists of mine from here going out. So yeah, that's anything else for Cyrus talk, or are we going to talk Metro Station? Just talk different Cyruses now.
Can we just do a deep dive on the Cyrus? Can we just do a deep dive on the Cyrus family next episode?
Let's do it.
Cool to have different opinions across the board. We love having different opinions rather than me and Mitch and Matt just geeking out over Doc Ock. neither one of us hates the idea of Doc Ock being in the next Spider-Man movie.
Not one of us,
but, you know what we can talk about is we can get into our top five again this week, top five holiday specials. Reason we're doing these top fives is because some of these, while we probably could have done top 10 of Thanksgiving foods, and maybe we could have done top five or top 10 of holiday specials as well. Some of my top 10s, and maybe you guys can agree too, have been like, oh, well, 10 through 6 are all kind of jumbled, but 5 through 1 are the ones that I really care about. And I think with holiday specials, like, there's very few and far between that really stand out. Especially, I think most of us will have similar lists, especially just from our childhood. So yeah, we can get right into it. You guys know how we do. We go one by one. If we need to talk about it, we will. If not, then that's the deal. So starting off at number 5 for me, I put kind of a weird one, Mitch, or maybe it was Matt that brought up the idea of possibly using a TV episode or a TV special as one of ours. I didn't think I was going to do this until I thought about, I really love the Secret Santa episode of The Office. When Michael, they do a Secret Santa and he goes $300 over the price limit and gets Ryan the iPod, and everyone's jealous and starts fighting for the iPod. That just is a good Christmas episode of a TV show. Yes, we get it. I'm an Office stan. I love The Office. All of us on this pod like The Office. But I was thinking about that and I thought, you know, that'd be a good standalone episode for NBC to air around the holidays, because that's just just an all around great episode with Dwight with the elf hat and the elf ears. It's just a damn good episode of the show and just a good Christmas episode of a TV show. So Matt, what you got at your number 5?
Before that, I will say that is a great honorable mention, and I should have listened to my own idea for that. But whatever. yeah, we could definitely do just even top 5 Office Christmas episodes. There's definitely enough to do that. But anyway, sure. My number five is the BoJack Horseman, Sabrina's Christmas Wish. I don't think it's technically like on Netflix. I think it's like listed as its own, it's like little half hour thing, like not as part of like the BoJack like canon or whatever you want to call it. But I just like it's a good look into the, you know, fictional show that he was on back in the 90s when he was on a very famous TV show. But yeah, you'll notice that I really like parody from my list, and I think that this is just a great parody of the classic cheesy 90s family sitcom format with a horse that no one seems to acknowledge. So yeah, that's my number five. Mitch, what's starting your list?
I have It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, A Very Sunny Christmas. I think I was the one that put the, well, I kind of, from Matt's list, I was like, oh, he did BoJack Horseman. And I was like, you know what? I think It's Always Sunny would count as a Christmas special. It's a Christmas episode. But I'm trying to remember, like, this isn't something that I watch like every year, but, you know, It's Always Sunny in the gang. They just go through, and like run into a bunch of shenanigans and, you know, do crazy stuff like on the show regularly. So, but it's more Christmas themed. Yeah, I don't really have anything else to say about that. Logan, what do you got at number four?
I got the original Frosty the Snowman, a little half hour special cartoon. Not much to say about this. This is a nostalgic little piece I included. Well, I mean, they're all nostalgic except for The Office. That was only a few years ago. But yeah, Frosty was, I looked forward to it, but I wasn't jumping up and down when it aired. And to this day, like, I'll still tune in. Like, whenever they air this Frosty the Snowman, I'll be sure to watch it. Because it's a cute little holiday special. And hopefully they're still teaching kids to watch Frosty the Snowman, unless there's something in Frosty the Snowman that's somewhat inappropriate and
cancelable.
It's canceled. But I'd say maybe one of the weirder things is how the evil magician like treats those kids is kind of weird. But
yeah.
Also, after saying it out loud, it made me think, why is there an evil magician in this special? They had to have a plot, didn't they?
Guess so.
So yeah, Frosty the Snowman is my number four. What you got, Matt?
So mine is kind of like a more, just very similar in the same vein as Frosty, but it was a version that for some reason my elementary school showed us like seemingly five times a year. And I didn't hate it. I don't know. It's just called The Snowman. It's all animated. The music in it's like very, very apparent that this was made in 1982. But it's basically the story of Frosty. A kid like makes a snow. There's no talking or anything. It's very zen and kind of trippy. They like fly to the North Pole and meet Santa. It's, you know, it's a whole thing. But I don't know. I always like think back on it fondly, and I feel like I have to track down some bootleg of it on YouTube at least once a year just to, you know, just to feel a little childlike again. So my number four is The Snowman. What's your next on your list, Mitch?
I have the classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the classic 1964 stop motion, like claymation style of short, like I think it's, I want to say the runtime, okay, it's about an hour or 50 minute runtime. Yeah, I just grew up watching this as a kid, and I think I was like freaked out by it a little bit just because it was like weird and different. Like there wasn't very many like claymation things that were on TV until like as I got older. I think some, oh man, what is it called? some more claymation stuff started coming out and becoming more popular. But just the classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer story. Logan, what do you got at number three?
I'm going to double down on you, Mitch, and also say my number three is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Same reasons. It also freaked me out a little bit as a kid, too. I think the Abominable Snowman is kind of questionably creepy, as well as some of those little misfit toys were a little weird looking, too, similar to Sid's room in Toy Story, just kind of odd. Kind of an odd sight, but that's why they are the misfit toys, I guess, because they don't fit in with everyone else. I think it's a great classic, and even just talking about it, some of those little songs that those elves are singing are starting to pop into my head. So before that really happens, I'll move it on to to Matt. What you got at your number three?
My number three is from my favorite show of all time, Futurama. They have a few different Xmas episodes, as they call it. And this is the first one from season two, where you kind of learn the how in 1,000 years Christmas has pivoted from a time of joy to a time of extreme fear since the Santa robot that had been built several hundred years ago was not calibrated correctly, and everyone was deemed naughty, so naughty that they needed to be killed. So Xmas is a holiday to defend yourself from a killer robot. And I think it's funny just the way that Futurama kind of pokes fun at that while still also keeping in the Christmas themes of family and togetherness and also robot attacks. So that's the midpoint of my list. What about you, Mitch?
I have Flintstones Christmas Carol as my next number. And this is something that I watched. Like, this came out in 1994. And I remember growing up watching this on Christmas Day. I think it was like Cartoon Network or something, like whatever channel would air this. I remember watching it Christmas Day every year. And I don't know why, it's just something that kind of like, it's just the classic Christmas Carol tale just with Flintstones characters. But I just remember that as being like the standard for a Christmas Carol until like I finally realized, oh, it's actually like there's like other versions of just a Christmas Carol, not Flintstones-esque. So, but yeah, it's a funny, you know, kid friendly, classic, just, you know, classic Christmas Carol tale with the Flintstones. So, Logan, what do you got at number two?
My number two is the Dr. Seuss, how the Grinch Stole Christmas, the animated version, of course. I love this. I loved the book as a kid as well. I remember having the book. I remember this freaked me out a little bit also growing up. Funny how these nostalgic things tended to freak us out as kids. And now we look back and say that they're some of the better pieces of film we watched when we were little. But I enjoy this. It's the quick, nice, like 15, 20 minute special with the classic You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch song and the Da Do Dores or however they say it. Hopefully I don't get canceled for making fun of the Who's. I absolutely love it. I'm sure you guys will have similar thoughts, so I'm just gonna move right along and ask Matt what his number two was.
Yep, just running it back. How the Grinch Stole Christmas is my number two as well. The only other thing I wanted to say about it is the just buttery smooth voice of Boris Karloff, the guy who voices basically the whole thing. Also the guy who played the most popular iteration of Frankenstein, So that's just incredible range with green characters on his part. So again, no need to repeat too much. So my number two is How the Grinch Stole Christmas. What's your runner up, Mitch?
Well, I have A Charlie Brown Christmas as my runner up. I think I'm in the minority in this one, as it putting it as my number two. But yeah, it's just a classic, another classic, a classic Christmas viewing for, I guess, a special. I did not realize that it was made in 1965. And also the description for this, it kind of caught me off guard when I read it to myself, because I don't remember it being like this. Maybe I just, my memory's shot, but, the description on IMDb is, depressed at the commercialism he sees around him, Charlie Brown tries to find a deeper meaning to Christmas. And I'm just like, that's like very insightful for what is going on inside of Charlie Brown's mind. But yeah, you know, can't go wrong with watching it at Christmas time. Love Charlie Brown. Woodstock, shout out to Woodstock and Snoopy. I know they're listening.
Snoopy's a big fan. He writes in all the time.
but yeah, Logan, what do you got at number one?
I've got the Flintstones Christmas. I've got Charlie Brown as my number one. I think Matt can double down and say the same.
Yep.
Love me some Charlie Brown. Why do I feel like every Charlie Brown synopsis starts off with the phrases "depressed Charlie Brown"?
He needs to pay more than 5 cents for mental health therapy.
Look at Lucy being ahead of her time on being aware of mental health problems in America. Yeah.
And trying to profit off it. Also, Talkspace, sponsor the pod.
Please. Please, Lucy, if you're hearing this, hit us up with a discount code so our listeners can get mental health advice. That's a great scene. Just an all-time scene where he's sitting on the stool and she just like flips the little sign that says like the doctor is in. Lucy, are you even a licensed doctor? I'm pretty sure your practice is going to get shut down.
Yeah.
But yeah, same thing with what Mitch said. Classic Charlie Brown. It's a feel good nostalgic special. Same with all the Charlie Browns. It's a great pumpkin Thanksgiving. That's probably seen as the least popular one, the Thanksgiving one, but still solid. They're all good in my eyes. I love Charlie Brown. Matt, do you have any more to add, or should we just jump right to Mitch's number one?
My only thing to add is that just like when watching Charlie Brown, the experience isn't complete if my dad doesn't say, like, after the part where I think it's Charlie who's saying, it's like, is that what the meaning of Christmas is all about? And then I think like Linus like recites like the actual like Christmas story like from the Bible in like the silence, like after that scene, my dad has to say, that's your Grammy's favorite part. So I have to do that for my girlfriend when it's just the two of us watching it now. So the torch is being continued, Dad. Thank you. I'm a cute guy. What's your number one, Mitch?
Well, I have How the Grinch Stole Christmas at number one. You guys already talked about it pretty much well enough for me to not talk too much about it. But yeah, just growing up watching this, another classic. And with Matt talking about Boris Karloff, that's a pretty interesting fact that I did not know. That's all I got.
Well, cool. And that's our top 10. And closing out this show today, I wanted to do, we do it about once a month or so, kind of just check in on what everyone's consuming, whether it's music, if they're gaming, if they're watching any shows, if they finished any shows lately, kind of like a, what are we watching or what are we doing? So I'll go ahead and list three things that I did or that I've done recently. I finally finished Dexter. It's an eight seasons, 12 episodes each situation, each an hour long. So it was an investment and it took me a couple months to do, but I finished it and it was a good show. And I recommend watching it. However, you better watch fast, considering I found out that it's also being taken off of Netflix at the end of 2020. Interesting coincidence that I finished it in time. But yeah, I watched me some Dexter and I really enjoyed it. In fact, I enjoyed it so much that popular Binge Boys spinoff show The Run Through, I'm going to be sitting down with my cousin Tanner and my roommate Turner. So Turner and Tanner are joining me to talk in depth about the series and our favorite moments from the show and kind of a general overview of the show. If you don't have time to watch it, don't worry. We'll summarize all eight seasons for you. Essentially, a dude kills people who he thinks deserves to be killed, aka other murderers, rapists, child molesters, anybody in between, but then is also a cop during the daytime, a forensic analyst. So yeah, it's a pretty damn good show. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I'd say it's probably it's considered one of the better TV shows of all time. It's a solid show and I recommend it. I started popular sitcom The Big Bang Theory on HBO Max. There's 12 seasons of that show.
Don't forget Young Sheldon.
Yeah, I'm not going to give that one a watch. I hear that one's not as well received. However, I started Big Bang Theory. I realized there's 12 seasons of it. Not sure how long it's going to take for me to do that one, but stay tuned. It's probably just going to be my like before bed show. Like the episodes are literally like 19 minutes because of cable TV using commercials to fill in the other 10 minutes. So you can blow through, like yesterday I started it and I watched like 9 episodes and that was only in like 4 hours. So like it's very doable, but God, it's going to be a long haul. So just stay tuned on that. I also quickly binged Harley Quinn, HBO Max animated series starring Kaley Cuoco, also a star of The Big Bang Theory. Quite funny. Definitely, if you're a fan of DC Comics, and it's kind of got a BoJack Horseman vibe to it, where the characters are very aware of who they are, and they're very aware of the world they live in. Very satire, very parody. But also with some cool superhero, supervillain action. So only 2 seasons of it so far, and I think the episodes are only 20 minutes a piece. So it's a nice, cool little short binge if you're interested. And then lastly, I watched a movie yesterday. I did a lot of TV watching this weekend. I watched Apple TV Plus original movie On the Rocks. It stars Bill Murray and Rashida Jones. And it was good. It's a story about a woman who has a suspicion that her husband is cheating on her. So her and her dad kind of go undercover and try to see if he's cheating on her or not. It's produced by A24. So it's a uniquely shot film and a uniquely made film. So it was good. A weird entry for A24, considering the only other entries thus far we've gotten, I think, are Hereditary and Midsommar, which were both very, very strange films in their own right. But yeah, all enjoyable stuff all around. Big Bang Theory, Dexter, Harley Quinn, and On the Rocks. That's what I've been up to lately. Also, I binge listened to Juicy J's new album, The Hustle Continues.
So, did it in fact continue?
I wasn't going to have us review that album on the pod, but Mitch, what you been doing lately besides our main programming here?
I've been working a lot, so I haven't really been able to binge a lot of content. But I've been listening to a lot of music. Black Pumas, like we were talking about earlier. I've been listening to their stuff, their new album, and it's really good. I also listened to the War on Drugs new live album just came out. So if you like live music, but in a pre-recorded setting, I would recommend giving that album a listen. It's from a lot of different shows that they've had, but the way that the production is like done on the album, they kind of just flow into one another very, very well. And they're kind of like a dad rock band, like very Dire Straits and like Bruce Springsteen and like Bob Dylan vibes, like all those kind of influences kind of influence them. And they're just really good, a really good rock band, kind of like old style rock band. So I'd recommend listening to that. As for TV shows and movies, I recently watched Christmas Vacation, even though I watch that like every damn year, but it's good as always. You know, Chevy Chase, can't go wrong with Chevy Chase.
Classic.
Another classic film. I started a Amazon Prime, or it was on the IMDb streaming platform, but moved to Amazon Prime. A show about Alex Rider, a book series that I read growing up. And so I watched the first episode of that, and it's actually not that bad. It's like that each episode's like about 50 minutes, 45, 50 minutes. But I got through the first episode and it was pretty good. Definitely going to try and finish that show. I think there's about 8 episodes, but moving very slowly when it comes to watching content right now, because they're working me like a dog out there on the streets, man. I'm delivering packages, so this is like the busiest time of year for delivery drivers, Amazon and FedEx, UPS, and my company that I work at, Lasership, is just busy as hell, man. So, yeah. Matt, what do you got going on?
So I know I said the Clone Wars might be getting the nod. That was kept in the minors. It did not quite make it up to the majors. So instead, I actually watched all of Atlanta, Donald Glover's show, not all of the 2 seasons that are out. Maybe hope help me understand you guys a little bit more, being the only Atlanta native on this show. But yeah, I thought that was really good. Can't really say anything unique that hasn't been said about it. I was a big fan of his and all the other performances on it. And then the music was also really good. I mean, it's kind of music adjacent as a show, so that's to be expected. Seeing the Game of the Year nominations, that both Ghost of Tsushima and The Last of Us 2 were nominated, it made me remember that I wanted to play The Last of Us 1 and just never got around to it. So that's been happening when I've had the time And I'll probably get flamed for this, but a guilty pleasure of mine has finally built up enough of a backlog to get started again, and that is 90 Day Fiancé.
Jesus.
Now, if you just want, like, we were talking about how Hillbilly Elegy is just the story of a broken family. You want to see some modern day broken families, you hit up 90 Day Fiancé. That is just the drama of humanity put on stage. It's so bad, but I just can't, I don't know, guilty pleasure, you know. Just got to do it. They're entering lockdown. Yeah, man, I could talk about it all day. I know we're running long here, so I'll cut it short. just look for my my side 90 Day Fiancé podcast coming soon.
Maybe we'll do a spinoff of Binging Batch, and we'll call it 90 Day Fiancé with Matt, and it's just Matt talking to himself about 90 Day Fiancé.
Yeah, dude. Don't even joke. I also thought about asking for exclusively 90 Day Fiancé personality cameos for Christmas this year.
Oh my god!
But yeah,
good deal. Good to hear that everyone's trying to consume some kind of content this holiday season, whether it's Harley Quinn or 90 Day Fiancé. We've got you covered. You're on the Binge Boys. Remind me again, you both have Disney Plus, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And you both have HBO Max or HBO?
Yes.
I found out this last week that I do have HBO Max.
Wow. We'll discuss offline, but I don't think anything crazy is coming to Netflix movie-wise this week. So I'm going to give you guys the choice whether we watch Black Beauty, Disney Plus original remake of an old movie also called Black Beauty, based on horses, or a movie that just came out on HBO Max this last weekend called Superintelligence. It's with Melissa McCarthy and I think James Corden. It's a comedy about some kind of intelligence. I don't know. I'm assuming super intelligence.
A super variety, yeah.
So we'll talk more offline. And I think next week we'll also talk about our top five favorite Christmas songs, whether they're classic Christmas songs or maybe if you're, well, I don't know why, but Matt gives off strong Michael Bublé Christmas song vibe.
Oh, come on, man.
So Maybe you've got some Toby Keith Christmas in your blood. But either way, that I think wraps it up for a longer episode of Binge Boys 153. A big shout out to Matt and Mitch as always for joining me. Love having you two a part of the show. I didn't tell you guys on Thanksgiving, but you know, with COVID and the election and just everything crazy that's happened this in 2020. I do really appreciate you guys taking the time to sit here with me a couple hours a week and talk about the industry that we love. I'm thankful for you guys, truly. That's 153. Make sure, as I said at the top, rate, review, and subscribe on all of the podcast listening platforms that you do. Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, wherever. Make sure you've hit that 5-star. Make sure you're following on Instagram. You're seeing all of our fun reviews. Shouts to Emily. Stay tuned for a crazy few weeks of the Binge Boys. I'll give you a quick rundown. I know we're running slow, but the holidays is time for plugging. As always, we'll have Binge Boys next week. And then I'm all over the place. Next Thursday, the 10th, is when you'll get that episode of All About Dexter. The following Thursday, the 17th, you'll get a run through on a rom-com called The Holiday, starring Jack Black and Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet and Jude Law. And then the following Thursday, which is Christmas Eve, you'll get a run through on the classic, maybe the greatest Christmas movie of all time, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, starring Jim Carrey. Not the greatest of all time. But either way, thanks, guys, for listening. Thankful for all the listeners. Hope everyone had a very happy and safe Thanksgiving. We'll see you guys all next week. Thanks, Matt and Mitch. Bye, guys.
Thanks, Logan. Bye.
Yep. Thanks, Logan. Peace.